This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Arif Roos, and as usual, on the phone lines with me is Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello, Mr. Daniel Fernandez.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cruise Control,
the car show on BFM.
We're having a bit of fun today because Richard's not around.
Exactly, the headmaster is not here.
Why is that?
No, he earns more money than us.
He gets to skip all of these things, doesn't he?
Exactly.
Anyway, in our car show, as usual, we have three parts. The first part, we're going to have a little bit of news and discussion, particularly on road tax exemption on EVs, as well as insurance claims about a burning car.
Hmm.
And in part two, we have car launches, the Honda City Hatchback Hybrid, a new BMW X3 facelift, and then finally, a new car review in the third part for the Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 AMG line.
Correctamundo.
So, without further ado, let's jump straight into the news. First piece of news is something that I think I got quite confused a little bit by, as mentioned. It's about the fact that EVs and hydrogen vehicles, or rather, emission-free vehicles, are now finally exempt from road tax. Wasn't this announced like, you know, months ago, Daniel?
It was announced, but it wasn't put in force. So some people who actually went out and bought a new EV were told that they need to pay a road tax. And because the system was not completely running, you know, I mean, of course, you know, when you want to redo something that's been running for so long, I mean, there's never been a time when the road transport department was not collecting some money for something. You know, I mean, you have to pay, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, I think they were a little bit confused and things were, they were trying to work out a system. But anyway, now, electric car owners, if you buy a brand new electric car, you don't have to pay a road tax. Now, it also makes me a little bit confused because, you know, why? Why are they not paying road tax?
Exactly. What's the point?
You see, the thing is, if you're not paying import tax for the cars being imported in, I can understand that. You know, there's a reason for that. But the road tax, you're on the road, you're using the road just like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you not paying road tax?
And not to mention that all of the charging stations and new infrastructure that has to be built to comply with these electric cars, they should be paying more road tax.
Yeah, I mean, but charging stations, you still have to pay for your vehicle to be charged. But why are you not charging them road tax? Now, of course, the numbers are very few. They're slowly growing. Why I keep saying this is because, can you imagine now? Tell me which middle class or poor person is buying an electric car today?
Nobody.
Exactly. You can't afford it. I can't afford it. Richard, with his expat salary, he can't afford it. And now you've got all these rich people probably sitting down somewhere, having a glass of really expensive wine, smoking some really expensive cigars and laughing and saying, hey, we don't have to pay road tax like the rest of the riot. I don't think that's fair. I'm sorry. I just do not think that's fair.
So another thing that really irked me about this announcement is that they announced something relating to PWDs, persons with disabilities. And they said that, oh, PWDs will also be exempt from paying road tax for their cars if it meets a number of criteria, one of which is as long as the cars they purchase are CKD national cars and are modified for disabled use. They also added that the exemption also applies to caretakers who are buying cars on behalf of the disabled person to use.
Mm.
But like you said, you know, why are they giving tax-free EVs and road tax exemptions to EV owners when people with disabilities deserve them more?
Exactly. You're very right there. And I think, you know, this is something that will be agreed by everybody listening. You know, disabled people need this because whether they're well-to-do or not, they've got something lacking and they need some help in one way or another. The caregivers, of course, need this. But rich people buying electric cars, even if there's a middle-class person out there who's just, you know, got a little bit of extra money and decides to buy a lower-priced EV, like, say, a Hyundai Kona or even a Nissan Leaf, why should they be given free road tax? I'm sorry, I don't agree with that.
Totally agree.
You know, unless the cars are floating. If the cars are defying gravity and floating and not touching the road surface, okay, if you're touching the road surface, please pay road tax.
Exactly.
Lucky you agreed with me, you know, I'll get really angry with you.
These days, I feel like I always agree with you, Daniel.
Thank you. Keep it that way.
But yeah, I mean, there's something seriously wrong with that picture right there, isn't there?
Mm.
But anyway, you wanted to bring up a story about insurance claims and a car getting into an accident and suddenly setting itself on fire, apparently.
Okay. This is quite funny because a few months ago, I was driving along the Glenmary main highway. If you're coming from Subang Jaya and heading to Glenmary, where all the car showrooms, workshops, and all the car dealers are, on your left-hand side, you would have seen a very sad state, a badly damaged Range Rover SUV. Okay, you know, cars have accidents. We see it all the time. But this car really had a bad frontal accident. And it looked like, you know, part of the rear also got damaged. Maybe it was a fender bender. I mean, you know, a chain reaction accident or whatever. Maybe it spun or whatever. But it was sitting there. You can see from the pictures, it looked quite badly damaged. But I think repairable damage. To me, it was repairable damage. Maybe the chassis was out of line, but repairable damage. Now, the car sat there for a few months. And, you know, I go to Glenmary nearly every week for one reason or another. So I'm going past and I'm looking at this car and thinking, you know, sad state. A few days ago, I go past. Whoop! It's burned to a crisp.
I wonder what happened.
And you know, the best part is, I actually braked, flicked, turned, just like what BFM is, you know. Came back around, went closer and had a look. Everywhere around it, you know, like the lamppost next to it, the tree and the grass and all, not burned, only the vehicle.
I guess that's what they call an internal combustion engine, yes. Right?
Now... Okay, yes. I in my article, I did make it sound like a little joke that, you know, this was set by kids or having a laugh or maybe an arsonist doing some, you know, some skill training or, you know, maybe there's a leaking petrol tank. There's no leaking petrol tank and things like that. But I think they looked at the cost to repair, the cost to restore this vehicle. And then they looked at the used value because, you know, these old Range Rovers, I mean, they're not very old, but, you know, a Range Rover, once it's past 8, 9, 10 years, the price really drops heavily. And this Range Rover is probably 10, 11, 12 years old, probably worth about 100, 150,000 ringgit, or maybe even 200,000. I don't know. The repair bill will probably cost as much as that. And then later when you want to repair it, you won't get it right completely, you know?
Yep.
So I'm just being a bad guy here and saying, hey, I think, you know, they lit a match and said, ooh, let's burn it. And claim insurance where it stands. So they burnt it. And if you look at the before and after pictures, I didn't take a lot of detailed pictures. There are little parts missing. So I think before they burnt it, they said, hey, I think some of the parts we can salvage and sell, you know, fuel flap, you know, some of the internal parts and all that. Huh? So they took away a few things and then they said, okay, like, this one we can sell for about 30,000 ringgit. Then we burn it, you know? So I sent this picture to a couple of friends of mine who work in a few insurance companies and one of them laughed and said, yeah, this is normal. Normally we do investigation, but you know, there are a few who get away with this because it's so perfectly done. But this one looks like it was a bit of a hazardous job because why? If you had a real fire, the surrounding area will also be a bit burnt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this was clearly planned.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not saying it's definitely an illegal activity, but it looks very dodgy. And the thing is, I can understand people doing this because can you imagine all those flooded cars if people can't get them fixed? This, of course, wasn't a flooded car. This is an accident damaged car. But imagine people who had flooded cars and they can't get them fixed and they can't find the money to do it. What will they do? Light a match.
Yeah, I mean, what better way to send a car off, right?
Yep.
It's completely useless to anybody else at that point.
Correct.
And nobody wants to pick up an old Range Rover because once you even fix the body, then there's everything else to fix.
Exactly. So, you know, sad to say, but this is one of those things.
I'm a bit surprised by one, the fact that these things actually still happen. And number two, that it must be considered a crime, right, to do such a thing.
I'm sure it's fraudulent insurance claim, but you know, it happens all the time. I mean, it happens in different situations. I remember a long time ago when people used to go for their, you know, Saturday night rendezvous on Sepang Circuit.
Yeah.
If they had an accident, what they do? They tow the car out and they slam it against a tree and say, oh, road accident. Because why? If you have an accident while racing, you can't claim insurance.
That's very true.
Yeah. So they take it outside on a main road, just find some, you know, estate road, just whack it and then say, oh, I lost control while on the, you know, state road and I hit a tree. And then they claim insurance. And then, you know, it's how you work it out with the insurance adjuster. But, you know, this has been going on for years. That is why we have such high insurance premiums. And that's why insurance companies are always being very sticky about third-party insurance.
And especially with acts of dog.
Yes.
I feel like there should be some sort of destruction derby where we can take all of these, you know, destroyed cars and all of those stuff and just find a way to use them in terms of motorsport. Just drive around a dirt track, and that'll be a lot of fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you know, if your car is flooded, you can't drive it, you can't start it. That's number one. If your car is had an accident, you can't start it, you can't drive it, you know?
Yeah.
I know they have it in US, it's very big. They also have it in some parts of Australia. That's because cars there are so cheap, and it's a huge spectator spot which people actually pay money to go to.
Yeah.
In Malaysia, you have it. Some fella will come to the fence, you know, put a ladder and stand and watch, you know. And, you know, the Derby ain't going to make no money.
That is true. That is true. Do you have anything else to add about this story, Daniel?
I just have to say, you know, next time you want to do something like this, don't put it on the main road. Don't put it where my eyes can see it. And don't put it where I'm going to take a picture and write a story about it.
Thanks for that, Daniel. So that was Daniel's little story on seeing a burnt car on the way to Glenmary on the highway. If you missed the first part of the discussion, we also discussed a little bit about the emission-free vehicles that are finally exempt from road tax and how they just don't make sense. Stick around for part two as we will be talking about the new and slightly expensive Honda City Hatchback Hybrid and a bunch of BMW X3 facelifts as well. After that, it'll be a new car review of the Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 AMG line. Stick around on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Arif Roos, and as usual, on the phone lines is Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for still tuning in and not tuning out.
If you've missed the first part, we spoke a little bit about insurance claims, burning cars and accident cars, as well as emission-free vehicles that are finally exempt from road tax. We have had a little bit of a discussion about that and how that does not make sense in the bigger picture. Something else that does not make sense, though, is the brand new Honda City Hatchback Hybrid, or the E:HEV. Why is that, Daniel?
Okay, the price is a little bit high. I can understand, you know, the technology is very complicated. The technology is expensive, but at this price, it's going to be a little difficult to shift large numbers. I mean, Honda has always given very good value, very good pricing on all their vehicles. Even like, you know, you look at the new Civic, the pricing, it's really remarkable for what they're giving. But when it comes to high technology cars like this, there are going to be a lot of people looking and saying, hey, why so much? Because this car actually, if you ask me, it should sit maybe around 95,000 ringgit, you know?
But the price is not 95,000, it's 13,000 ringgit more expensive than that at 108,000 ringgit for Honda City. That's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's, you know, this segment of buyers, you know, this segment of Malaysian buyers, the moment you go past 100,000, there's so many other options. For example, the Civic, you know, I mean, if I'm going to buy this car and then I look at the price and I say, I pay a bit more, I get the Civic, you know, it's bigger, it's got a bit more prestige in its name, you know, things like that. Yes, okay, I'm saving money, this car is very economical and all that. But in this price segment also, do I really want to worry about fuel economy that much? Because, you know, the Civic is also quite economical.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be tough. Like, I think because of the technology and the way the car has been developed, it's not easy for them to bring the price out. And, you know, you must also remember, they don't have a Proton badge. If they had a Proton badge, they can sell it for 80,000, you know? Because they don't have to pay tax, like, national car and all that, you know? But Honda is Honda and they have to pay taxes. So we'll have to see what happens, like, you know?
I guess so. And you know, if you look at the price sheet and the spec sheets of this car, essentially this new Hatchback City RS E:HEV, sure, it has all the kits like Honda Sensing, Honda Connect, and of course the E:HEV powertrain, which, you know, is essentially a petrol engine that can either regen the battery or drive the front wheels and vice versa. The motor can actually do that as well. But if you look at the price list, I mean, the City starts at about, 75,000 ringgit for the base model, right?
Right.
The top spec of the non-hybrid City costs 88,000.
Yes. Okay. Now I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry to interrupt, but, you know, you say 88,000. Now, from 88,000 to 107,000, you must understand, that's all normal petrol-powered cars. This car's got lithium-ion battery, not cheap. A PCU, not cheap. Two motors, you know, these are all added technology put into the car. Don't talk about the additional safety features and all that. Mm. I'm just talking about added technology for the HEV hybrid system, which costs money and you got to pay for it. And this is what saves you fuel. So you can make a decision and say, okay, I'm willing to spend this extra money to save fuel, or I buy a cheaper car and I pay more for fuel. because we don't know what's going to happen with petrol prices.
So here's the other thing, which is the fact that, you know, the Honda HR-V is going to be coming, and they are probably going to bring, you know, the EHEV version of that, which instead of marking up the city for 20,000 ringgit, why not introduce that to Honda HR-V and mark that up to like a mid-spec Civic?
Well, if you think about it, Honda has made a commitment that they will introduce as many HEV models as possible, which is their hybrid models, okay? Mm. They want to go into that direction. Of course, everyone has to go towards electrification in some, you know, future date. There's no rush to do that. But this is, I would say, the start, you know? You start with something like this, which is a hybrid powertrain. You build up the confidence with people using lithium-ion batteries and understanding how a motor works and, you know, how long it lasts. I mean, yes, early hybrids didn't last as long. The motors were not as cheap to change and all that. But as this becomes more common, as you build up and then your R&D costs are paid up, they can bring the price down. But this will happen maybe 6, 7, 8 years. Now, during that time, I don't think the Malaysian government is going to go out and say, hey, no more selling anything petrol-driven. Everything must be electric. They can't do that because why? Not every manufacturer can go into full electrification and still deliver a reasonably priced car. Like we've talked about it before, you're not going to get an electric car for below 100,000 ringgit.
Yep.
That's fact. Even Perdua will not be able to do it because already Perdua cars pricing is so low that it's easy for people to afford lower middle class and middle class people. Now, if you start having an electric car, if you add all these features which I've just mentioned just now, I mean, lithium-ion battery, motors and everything else, plus the whole electrification process, this costs money. It's not coming at 2,000-3,000 ringgit. It's coming at 10,000-20,000 ringgit. So you add all that in, then you add the R&D cost, you cannot bring a car for under 100,000, even if it's fully tax-free.
And I guess this Honda City hatchback hybrid proves that.
Yes. I know some people will say, hey, you know, this car in China costs so much. Yeah, but you see, what they're selling in China, first, there are incentives from the government. Secondly, some of the small hybrids, small electric cars that they're selling in China, which cost about 40, 50,000 ringgit Malaysian, the driving distance is 40, 50 kilometers. That's number one. Number two, these cars are tiny. They're literally two-seater cars. They're literally like, you know, the original smart car, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Number three, they have no safety features. They have very basic safety features. They have very basic tires and brake systems and all that. If you ask me, it's a car to be used in a golf cart or in a housing area, you know?
yeah.
You don't go interstate with them. A lot of people don't understand this. They just, you know, they see what is being advertised in China and say, oh, that's this car. Okay, it's a bit ugly, but, you know, it's 50,000 ringgit. Why can't Malaysians do it? Don't be so quick to say things like that. It's just like, you know, when a lot of people said, oh, why am I paying so much for my smartphone, 3,000 ringgit, when I can get a smartphone from China for 300 ringgit. Yeah, you buy the $300 ringgit smartphone. I bought one for my kids before when they were young. How long does it last?
Barely a year.
6 months at best. You know, the battery goes, the camera goes, the software goes, the thing has to be renovated and restored and repaired.
Yep.
And when you add all that in, I might as well just buy a smartphone for 3,000 ringgit and let them use it for 3 years.
Yep.
So this is all technology. It's how you want to look at it. You don't want to buy something so cheap and it's not safe. And then when you have an accident, you start slamming everybody. Let's be frank about this. You're not going to get anything that's modern technology, state of the art, full set of features, for less than 100,000 ringgit.
And just bringing it back to the Honda City hatchback, this is, you know, the hybrid system from Honda is very unique to Honda itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
So just to summarize, the City hatchback is more of like a statement piece from Honda then.
Yeah.
And we ran a poll asking our listeners on Instagram at BFM Cruise Control whether 108,000 ringgit was reasonable at all.
Right.
And Daniel, what do you say about this?
I think it's reasonable if you want to adopt new technology. If you're just looking for a commuter car, once in a while to go out station, just buy the regular Honda City or, you know, sedan version of the hatchback. You know, it's really up to you what you want.
And I think a lot of our people who voted on our poll kind of agreed with that because 87% of people think that it's way too expensive for Honda City, whereas 13%, which is, you know, still quite a number of people, enough to make a niche, I guess, if we're judging by our small market research. But 13% of our listeners think it's priced just right, which is kind of surprising to me. But, you know, it is kind of a statement piece that we'll probably see more introductions of this powertrain from Honda in the future. It's going to be quite interesting in the next year or so.
Yes. Yep.
Speaking of interesting, this is quite an interesting car to me because it's the BMW X3. And 6 months or 9 months after the facelift was launched globally, BMW Malaysia with their localized X3 has finally decided to bring it over and make it over here.
Yep.
So this is the new locally assembled BMW X3. It gets new front and rear lights, new bumpers, wheels, trims, and infotainment. And overall, over the past 6 to 9 months globally, it seems to be a very well-loved update that people seem to think that it does a really good job to extend the X3's life cycle. There's three variants that they're going to make here. All M-Sport versions are available as options, but they all use the same 2-liter four-cylinder engine. At the base model, costing 315,000 ringgit, you get a two-wheel drive version of the X3 called the S-Drive 20i. Then you top up about 40,000 ringgit, you get the X-Drive 30i, which is the mid-range model, all-wheel drive. And then you subtract 1,000 ringgit at 357,000 ringgit and you get the full hybrid version, which I think should be the headline of this story because this is the first plug-in hybrid X3 that we have here. So now you can buy a totally petrol X3, a hybrid X3, or you can buy an iX3, which costs just about the same price, you know, between 300 and 400,000 ringgit.
True. The thing is, you know, I don't think it's an all-new car because it's only got a new interior, some changes outside, but the drivetrain is still the same.
Yeah, the drivetrain is all the same.
Yes.
So for the xDrive 30e hybrid version, as new as it might sound, still think that is using the old hybrid technology because you only get 50 kilometers of electric range, whereas I think the newer models in Europe and in the US, they are up to about 70 to 80 kilometers of range.
Correct. Some of them even are claiming much higher than that, you know?
Yeah, so not an all-new powertrain, but all-new looks and an all-new trim that Malaysians can buy into. 357,000 ringgit. You think this will outsell the petrol versions?
I'm not a big fan of hybrids, you know?
Yeah, I mean, clearly.
Yeah, these premium hybrids, a lot of them, after a while, they start giving problems. You know, if it's a plug-in, even worse. You know, we've seen it happen before. We've seen some manufacturers actually pull out of this game. And if you really want to compare, you think about it, the nearest competitor to this vehicle would be the current Volvo XC60 T8 facelift.
Yep.
Okay. Now, that facelift came out in about, I think, October, November last year. Mm-hmm. You know, they refined the look of the XC60, which is already a good-looking vehicle and one of the best-selling Volvos to date.
Yep.
It's a nice-looking crossover SUV. It's about the same size as this car. And if you think about it, it previously, it was already selling better than the X3. The X3 wasn't the most popular BMW on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also had the Lexus NX.
Yep.
But the Lexus NX has been discontinued. A brand new one is coming out next month. So the Volvo sells for 325,000, which is just 10,000 more than the basic X3. So that could be a little bit of an issue. On top of that, you got the NX coming. The NX will be fully imported. It might be around 350,000. No, Lexus is always slightly more expensive. So I think there will be some worrying at showroom level in trying to shift the BMW X3 facelift. But again, I don't know what's going to happen in terms of supply also, because if there's no supply of Volvos or Lexuses, then this car will sell, because there are a lot of people out there who just want a new car and they're not willing to wait.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. And just to add on the Volvo as well, because of the facelift that they introduced recently, you get more electric range. I think it's 75 kilometers.
Yes, you're right. Yep.
So if you are interested in driving all electric, there are some people who drive plug-in hybrids completely and all electric all the time.
Correct.
And they only have to fill up at the petrol station once. If you are one of those people, maybe the Volvo would be your better bet. Mm. But you will be missing the driving experience of the X3, which I can vouch for is very good. Anyway, anything else to add about that?
Nope.
Well, then we gotta head to the break, because after the break, we are gonna be reviewing, to me, when I test drove this car, probably the class leader in this segment. It's the Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 AMG line. Daniel will be reviewing this, so stick around on BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is RF Roos, and I am, as usual, joined by Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for still tuning in and not tuning out.
If you've missed any part of the show, in part one, we spoke about road tax exemptions on EVs and how that doesn't look quite right, and as well as burning cars on the highway beside Glen Marie. Probably has something to do with an insurance thing. In part two, we recently spoke about the Honda City hatchback and the BMW X3 facelift, but now it's time for a car review of the Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 AMG line. Take it away, Daniel.
Hello, everybody, and you know, thank you for still tuning in. And the most important thing is thank you for waiting for this wonderful test drive review. This is the Mercedes GLA 250 AMG line. Now, why I say wonderful reviews is because I was really impressed with this car for two things. Number one, the drive dynamics. It's quick. This 2-liter engine is quick. I'll go into it later. The space. The former GLA was a little bit tight. The former GLA sat on, to me, an A-class body, just raised up, you know, nice cladding on the side, you know, chunky fenders and things like that. And I remember a few years ago when they invited us to Europe to test drive it, I looked at it and said, this is what I like, because I like small, chunky vehicles. I don't like large vehicles.
Yep.
And when I took it out, and then soon after that, they came out with the A45 AMG, you know, the GLA 45 AMG, which is like the A45 AMG. It was equally fast. It was equally exciting. Even though it was raised up with big chunky wheels, it still drove like a sizzling hot hatch. So we had a facelift about 3 years ago. Okay. It was more refined, rounder edges, you know, but you still had that same silhouette. And a lot of people complained. They said, you know, there's no space at the back. You know, my tall cousin can't sit. My tall two girlfriends, the twins from Siberia, can't fit. You know, when you hear things like that, okay, you know, they're not living in the car. Once in a while, you go out, a little bit of tight space is okay. But people were not happy with the tight rear end. Now comes a completely new GLA. Now, this car was launched globally 2 years ago. But because of the pandemic and everything else, it was slow to come to Malaysia. And then a year later, it arrived. Now, when it arrived, it was fully imported. The first batch was fully imported. It was December 2020, yes. Okay?
Yeah.
And we saw the car and we thought, yeah, it looks a lot like the GLC, you know?
only scaled down and I guess a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, muscular fenders, more rounded in its shape. Less sharp edge, nose heavy, you know. But, you know, I'm not the demographic of buyer. I'm sure in Germany, when they do designs of cars, they have a focus group, a whole bunch of people come in. There's no Daniel Fernandez there, you know. It's all people who actually take out money and buy these cars. So they would have said, hey, you know, I need more leg room. I need more height. I need a car that's a bit taller. Can you extend the sides? Hey, why the car so sharp? Can you make it a bit more rounded? And that's what they did. And they made it more like the GLC. So at first glance, if you look at this car, you say, hey, this is a GLC that has been tweaked a bit. Then you realize it's actually smaller than the GLC. Not much smaller, a little bit smaller than the GLC. It's got that same chunky 5-spoke AMG wheels, you know, and the same nose treatment. So Germany decided, I think this is the best way to go with it. And it succeeded because it took a year, about 10 to 11 months, for the CKD to come. And the reason why it took so long, besides COVID and everything else, it was just in short supply globally.
They couldn't get enough cars produced?
They couldn't get enough cars produced because globally it was doing so well, you know? So by the time it came to Malaysia, they started assembly and everything else. We just got to see the car late last year. And then when we asked for a test drive unit, they said, sorry, sold out. Asked again, sold out. Asked again, sold out. I said, come on, you don't want us to test drive the car? And then I had a couple of friends who actually wanted to buy this car, even without me test driving it or giving any remarks because nobody cares. They said, no, we want to buy this car. Can you follow us to the showroom? And when we went to two different car showrooms, Mercedes-Benz showrooms, they politely said, sorry, we're sold out. Are you willing to wait 4, 5, 6, 7 months, you know? So then I realized this car is actually selling very well. So finally, a few days ago, this just happened a few days ago. Mercedes calls me and say, okay, we just got the car in. Do you want to test drive it? I ran there. I literally ran there and said, okay, yes, give me the car. Because, you know, people have been waiting for the review. People have been waiting to find out everything they can find out about this car, you know?
Yeah.
And I know the show is coming up on Wednesday. You know, we have 3 million listeners listening in waiting for this news, you know? So I got the car. I test drove it over the weekend. And I tell you, it is quick. It's a 2-liter engine that's really quick. Now, I want to share with you some of the specs on this car. It's a 2-liter engine, 8-speed dual clutch transmission, 224 horsepower, 350 newton meters of torque. Now, that sounds like a hot hatch, right?
Yeah, big numbers.
Yes. But also, it's a very common set of figures for a lot of its competitors, okay? Hmm. But here's the best part. This car will do 0 to 100 in sports mode in 6.9 seconds.
Yeah.
So you got a tall vehicle, chunky, with big wheels, wide tires, able to still do the century sprint in 6.9 seconds. This engine is responsive. The torque buildup is very impressive.
Hmm.
And this is what Mercedes have done with their turbocharged engines, even in the E-Class and the C-Class and everything else. But you don't really feel it because it's all sedans and it's big and it's, you know, it's heavy and it's low to the ground. But when you see it happening to a compact crossover like this GLA, you start really appreciating it. And then comes, you know, the driving dynamics. Now in town, you know, Mercedes-Benz has got that screen. You know, there's so many things you can play with. I shared some pictures online. But, you know, when you're sitting in traffic, this is when you can entertain yourself by saying, hey, Mercedes, what's happening? Hey, Mercedes, can you tell me where's the nearest roti canai? You know?
Yeah.
You know? Hey, Mercedes, you know, where's RF Roos' house? You know, and then, you know, because celebrities, they have the houses, you know, logged in. So you can entertain yourself. And then the seats, they're very comfortable.
Yeah.
As always with all Mercedes-Benz, especially the new models in the last few years, you have your gear shifter on the right-hand side on behind the steering wheel. There's no middle gear shifter, right?
Yep.
You have your power seats adjustments on the door panel top, not at the bottom of the seats, right?
Yep.
If you get into a car like this for the first time, you say, why the gear shifter here? Like, hi, yeah. Why the power seat adjustment here? See, people who are used to normal cars will say this is very unusual.
Yep.
And I remember every time the last few years when I test drive a car, it'll take me a few times in and out of the car to get used to things like this. Because, you know, Mercedes-Benz is unique for this. But this time I realized, because I got a couple of my friends to test drive the car. These are Mercedes-Benz owners. These are E-Class owners, C-Class owners, even GLB owners who just wanted to test drive this car. And they felt really at home. And, you know, immediately they got running with the car with the infotainment screen, the little pedal shifters on the multi-function steering wheel and everything else. Then I realized this. Mercedes-Benz is very smart. They create this unique features that persuades consumers to keep buying a Mercedes-Benz.
It's almost as if once you enter the Mercedes-Benz lifestyle, you can never leave it, right?
Yes.
Everything just makes sense. I remember reading an article a long time ago on like one of those US websites where they were complaining about the Mercedes power seat buttons on the door. And they said, oh, you know, that doesn't make sense. You know, if it's something seat related, it has to be on the seats. But
yes,
soon warmed up to the idea that actually it makes sense because you need to know where the toggles are, you know, yes, how they move. And
you can see what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. So
instead of feeling around in the dark at the bottom of the seat.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if you think about it, like how these two friends of mine got so used to the car immediately, you know, they could immediately use the infotainment system and everything else. If you buy any other current luxury car, okay, which are the rivals to this car, you have to keep learning as you go from model to model, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Mercedes makes it like it's common with all their models right up to the S-Class, you know.
Okay, so here's the point where I also had that same reflection where it's so amazing to be in the new GLA because it feels like a Mercedes, it operates like a Mercedes, the quality is also very good.
Yes.
But the fact that this same interior, exactly the same setup you see in the A-Class, the GLA, the CLA, the A-Class sedan and the GLB, you know, sometimes it can feel a little bit boring. But then again, when you buy one of those cars, you're either choosing one of those, not all of them, right?
Right. I want to come back to your word boring. Yes, for some people, they might say it's a little bit boring. But when you look at those aircon vents, you know, they look like jet engines, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and this time around, the screens have come a bit lower and they're almost integrated into the dashboard. So they've worked on making it as streamlined as possible, you know?
Yeah.
And the center console, you have the little touchpad there and it's so easy to use, you know, when you want to scroll through the screen. They just make life quite easy and, you know, it's evolving as you go along.
Mm.
So I like the fact that this new GLA has got a bit more room because, you know, my children have grown up. So when they got into the back, they didn't complain as much as with the previous GLA or even the A-Class. They said, you know, the headroom is fine, leg room. Three average adults in the back, no issue right now.
Mm.
You got a decent sized boot. So going, you know, hypermarket shopping or, you know, traveling outstation to buy durians, no issue at all.
Yep.
And getting in and out, you know, as we get older, we like cars that are a little bit raised because of our sore backs. And, you know, as we get older, you know, bending down a bit difficult, you know, I have to say, you know. So anyway, so this car comes as an all-rounder. I can see a lot of young families buying it. I can also see a lot of older people with money taking this as a retirement car.
I totally agree. And it feels like the demographics for the GLA buyer has changed, right?
It's, yes.
Used to be the car that if you got rich quickly, the GLA is what you bought.
Right.
But now it seems a bit more matured and responsible, more family-like.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. If my memory serves me right, your family has a Suzuki Vitara at home, right?
Yes, we do.
I think it's time to sell it and buy this.
The funny thing is, when I brought this car home, my mom, who's a huge Mercedes fan and was never convinced by the other Mercedes that I brought home,
right,
she completely fell in love with this car, particularly because one thing was the fact that on the outside, it has a lot of road presence for a small car, right?
Yes, yes.
But on the inside, when you're sitting in it and when you're driving in it, you don't feel big.
Right.
And that's something that I think appeals to a lot of the older generation.
Correct. You know, I can understand where your mom is coming from, because even with the older GLA and even with the A-Class, because they have very slimmed glass area for their spotty appeal, sometimes, you know, for the older people to see out, to spot that little motorcycle in your blind spot,
yeah,
or to spot that weaving cyclist, you know, it's a bit difficult. But with this car, you got pretty good outward view and you got more glass area to see out, you know? So I think it'll do very well. I mean, it's already doing well. The only worry I see might be coming from the new Volvo XC40 Recharge.
Yes, and that is the facelift version, right?
That's the facelift version. It's got a lot of new features. The price is also going to be very attractive because it's going to be local assembled. I can see that giving this car a little bit of a threat because they're going to price it very well. The other thing is also, you know, the Lexus NX. Okay, it's a bit smaller. It's a bit lower. But the Lexus NX has got very good features, plus fully imported with a lower price, you know. So that could also be another deciding factor, because the Lexus NX is pure petrol. This car is pure petrol driven. It's not a hybrid like the Lexus. So, you know, there is some competition out there, lah.
2 or 3 years ago, I remember we were buzzing about the Volvo XC40 and, you know, how it was perfect for the urban Malaysian in general, because, you know, it was practical, it was fun to drive, it looked good, there's a hybrid coming as well, and we thought this car will be the class leader until we get a new generation. But
right,
honestly, after having driven this GLA 250, I think this is the class leader now. I think it's the best at doing everything.
Yes, they've definitely got it right again, you know, they've got it right again. But, you know, like any car, after a few years, you know, the competition gets better and better and better. So you must reappear with a huge whack, you know what I mean? And they've done it with this car. And I think the competition is basically, you know, looking around and saying, what can we do to better this car, you know?
So you've mentioned three cars. It's now Volvo XC40 that's coming in eventually, the Lexus NX, as well as this car. Wait for the Lexus and the Volvo, or just go right ahead and go for this one?
Well, how would I put it without upsetting anyone? If you're a diehard Mercedes fan, then of course, you know, there's no point waiting for another brand. You're diehard, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you're someone who's now driving, say, something under 150,000 and suddenly you got yourself a bit of money from your EPF or your bonus, or, you know, you sold some shares, you know, or you got a big donation from Tesla because he gave out a lot of donations and you're thinking of upgrading your lifestyle and your automobile and everything else, then I think you should take this for a test drive, get a feel of it, wait a few months for the rest to come along, take them out for a test drive also. Keep your booking on this, you know. I mean, when you go in test drive, you put a booking, right?
Yep.
Because the waiting list is quite long. You can always get back your booking if you want. But, you know, you put your booking in, choose your color and everything else. And then when the other cars come out, take it out for a test drive. Then decide whether you want to take away your booking or keep your booking. I think most people will keep their booking because it's very hard to persuade someone to walk away from the three-pointed star.
Very, very true.
Yes. Not to say they don't have not so savory products. I mean, there are some models that, you know, don't fly well for some reason or another. But I've known people who go in and after test driving, they say, yeah, this car okay lah, you know. A few months later, you see in the garage, hey, what happened? Oh, yeah, Mercedes lah, how to say no lah. Hey, you know, Mercedes, you know, I drive, I feel like a rich man. Hey, you know, I went to see my client, he saw my Mercedes, he said, wow, you're doing well. Okay lah, I must do business with you. So you have all these factors. The brand is so powerful. For a lot of people, how do they say no?
And might I remind everybody that this is no longer the cut price Mercedes that it used to be. You know, this is a quality Mercedes product now. You can't walk away from it.
Exactly. So 266,000 ringgit for this model, GLA 250. Of course, it's a GLA 200. I don't want to go into that. I think let's keep it to the 250. That's where all the bells and whistles are. And that really entertaining engine. Because why? It's no point driving a basic Benz and saving a few thousand ringgit when you can get this 225 horsepower GLA 250.
And I might just add my rule to that to say that generally the 200s of the Mercedes, not worth it if you're looking for Mercedes experience, I think.
Exactly, exactly.
Anyway, any last words, advice perhaps?
My advice is always this. If you're buying any car, please, you know, drive the competition back to back in the same day to get a better understanding. If you go and drive one car in the morning, drive another one in the afternoon or in the same morning, go and have lunch, then it's fresh in your mind what you just test drove, and then you can understand. If you're going to drive one car today and another car following weekend, you'll forget, you know? Every new car experience is so enlightening. I mean, when you go to any car showroom, from, you know, the most basic car showroom to the most premium car showroom, people are always smiling from year to year, except when they're paying a monthly installment. You know, when they're test driving, when they're talking to the salesman, they're always smiling. Because why? You know, I think all these car showrooms, they spray some gas inside. And the gas goes inside the test car also. And then people just get happy. You know, it's like, you know, the dentist, you know, the happy gas, you know. And, you know, they're happy until the first month installment. Then they're like, oh, I paid so much for my car. So I think you got to do it all in the same day so you have a better understanding of what you've tested with.
There you go. Top tip from Daniel Fernandez, as usual, about buying cars and researching cars and finding the right one for yourself. As Daniel mentioned, Mercedes-Benz GLA 250. You just can't walk away from it. 3-pointer star, quality car. Go find out what it feels like.
Try.
Anyway, that does it for this week's show. We spoke a lot this week about a number of things. In part one, we had a bit of a news and discussion about burning cars and a road tax exemption on EVs. In part two, we spoke about the overly expensive Honda City hatchback hybrid and the facelifted BMW X3. Just now, you've just heard a brilliant review of the Mercedes-Benz GLA 250 AMG line. As usual, if you've missed any part of this show, you can visit bfm.my to listen to the podcast again. You can also contact Daniel and read his articles at bsf.my. Don't forget, we also have an Instagram at BFM Cruise Control where you can reach out to us, talk to us, suggest some topics as well, and participate in some fun polls. My name is Arif Roos, and on behalf of Daniel Fernandez, we'll see you next week on Cruise Control, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.